It's time to bring in David Terrachuk. It's time for the media beat. Stop before I melt. David, good morning.
Good morning to you. I hope I'm bringing you some fresh
French
air, just to give you some difference.
Thank you.
You are.
Vive la différence.
Vive la différence. And vive for. Now, David has known me for some time, so the opinions expressed. David knows me. David is a diplomat. World class.
Well, I have to be a diplomat if I know you, right?
Absolutely. So good luck with where I'm about to just.
Should I just leave the building completely?
No, you're all right.
Oh, stick around, please,
yeah.
Marshall. I need your
help. He might need help.
If she's going to go on one of those rants, I think we need to.
Danger Will Robinson.
Here,
Danger.
I.
Okay. This will help. Jill Abramson, ex-New York Times editor, has said something happened while you were away, and I'm sure that you know about it.
Oh, are things allowed to happen while I'm away?
Isn't that odd?
Fill me in. What happened and what did she say about it?
There was this small seismic, stunning upset where Representative Crowley was beaten by a young lady from the Bronx.
Bronx. In my old hometown. Oh, in my current hometown. I just feel like it's a long way away from me now. But yes.
In your current hometown.
Shocking development.
Shocking.
Yes,
shocking. With something
even
like,
in France, we hear about these things.
With something like 19% of the vote. And the more shocking thing was that the local newspaper.
my hometown paper?
Was as surprised as anyone. And the former editor, Jill Abramson, of your local paper, basically said, you know.
Former editor, yeah.
Yeah, but in a, I mean, I think that she had the, as a former editor, the ability to say that. She said, you know, hey, that's not so okay.
The fact that the old gray lady was surprised by this development in its own backyard, you mean?
Yeah. And then
well,
it kind of went on to say, and this I found striking, it wasn't about her as much as it was Pat Healy's response, one of the editors. He just said he didn't have enough people, and they had to choose stories of national importance that their readers wanted. And
well, every newspaper star has to take into account what their available resources are, of course. I mean, doesn't that make sense? The New York Times is a fine newspaper internationally and nationally, and I would say that its metro section is very powerful, too. But on the other hand, we all have limitations. Now, whether those limitations should have been accepted or whether they should have tried to break out of the mold a bit, the restrictiveness of their tight resources, in view of how important that story was going to be, and of course it is a important story. The candidate was a former Bernie Sanders supporter and had a very very clear agenda that is very different from the Democratic Party's establishment. This is certainly something to watch, and I would have wanted the Metro staff to be dedicated to that particular story to a greater extent than it clearly was.
But more to the point, it's but for 80,000 votes, we would have a different president, more than likely. The number of people that even knew there was a primary, because it was so assumed that Crowley was going to win. I think it was like 19% turnout. Now, it seems
sure.
to
well,
me that the response...
I'm afraid that's rather typical of local primaries
but
the United States as a whole, every time they come around, isn't it? There's nothing particularly low turnout-ish about this particular turnout.
Well, I just fully believe, I'm afraid, and this is my opinion only, that had this been covered, then more people might have been, oi! You know, just a little more conscious about it. That's my only point.
Jill and I were talking about this yesterday. The only people that really covered this race was the media that covers progressive politics. Nobody
well,
else.
True.
Nobody.
And also to their credit, nonpartisan outlets like National Public Radio's affiliate in New York City itself, WNYC. They did a good job in promoting, that's not the right word for it, but making clear that listeners knew that this primary was coming. They did some fine coverage, the sort of coverage that you would be proud of.
What's interesting about what happened in that race, and I talked about it with Joe, and I actually sent letters out about this to various people, is that, A, it showed how poorly the standard bearers for the National Democratic Party really are, because their candidate, which supposedly was going to be a replacement for Nancy Pelosi, decided not to show up at the lone debate and sent a stand-in at that debate, which didn't help. And the progressive people did turn out and vote in that primary, and it was an astounding victory. But I'm going to run this by you, David. The president of the United States is now running for re-election. Probably 50% of the time he goes out, he does these rallies. First time
was certainly in the run-up to another general election. Yeah.
And
for the moment, we do have the midterms to get through first.
But what I'm suggesting to the Democratic Party is get some of those Democratic people that are going to run for president. Announce that they're going to run for president.
And get the hell out there
on the beat and get your supporters rallied up for the midterms. The Democratic Party is stuck in old-time politics, and Donald Trump is doing whatever the hell he wants, and he's redefining the role of the obviously president. Well, the Democratic Party's got to redefine itself and get out there and fight back in mass, not with just Bernie Sanders, not with just a local person running for Congress in New York. They really have to get out there and do their job.
Because I
have at times been had the company of very politically literate Americans while I've been here in France. And one of the conversations that I had just a few days ago was with people who generally skew towards the Democratic Party. And I think the general consensus is that we're in danger, severe danger of seeing the Democrats doing what they can often do also well. It's an old pattern that's being reverted to here, which is that of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. They could be very well placed now. And what are we seeing? We're seeing, this is a phrase that I surprisingly had not heard before, is that there's a long tradition in the Democratic Party of eating its own young.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what's interesting? By people right now getting out and declaring and running for president, I really mean this. I know it sounds crazy. You can run for president and you can have three or four different members of the party running for president, all bringing their supporters into the fold. While they're running for president, they're going to talk about the base of their candidacy being the midterm elections. The Democrats have to get all the different factions of their party out for the midterms if they want to make a change. Then you've got 2 years to worry about the presidential election. But the Democratic Party just has got to, if they want change,
they better man, woman, something.
They've
up.
Got to get all their factions out, the progressive, the centrists, and the old time liberal Democrats. They have to get them all out to vote in the midterms. And the only way that's going to happen is if they have a candidate that leads them to that leads them to that trough so they can drink that water.
And
many Europeans, by the way, often decry the fact that American election periods, I mean, the actual campaigning period is far too long. And Europeans, of course, go for much shorter runs into their elections. But this might be a case in point, and you're making a point which I think would even find favor amongst Europeans. Why don't we have an extended campaign running up to 2020? And I would say, I mean, I can't speak for American media, but I know enough people in the American media who would relish that thought as a way of ventilating the topics, getting issues thoroughly aired between now and the next time that Donald Trump is up for consideration by the electorate.
Because right now what's happening is, just from a visual standpoint, he's running.
Oh,
nobody
sure.
else is. Yeah. Well, yeah, but right. So if you look at any of these, he's out talking to people, and people are therefore enthusiastic, and then
it's not an option. It's not an option. I was having this argument with some other Americans too this week. It's not an option for the media to ignore the President of the United States, I'm afraid.
No.
So it's if you want a fair fight, as it were, or a fight as with a playing field as level as it ought to be in a democracy, then of course the media need another side to report on, or even a variety of sides. Might be a very interesting American election to have what you're suggesting: several candidates declaring early, and let's fight it out in the airwaves
because
between
the other,
now and 2020.
Because if those other candidates declare early enough and they get their followers. To show up for the midterms, then all of a sudden, from the midterms on, no matter what happens, you have a much clearer picture for the Democratic Party how to approach the 2020 elections. I'm sorry, David, I don't know about you, but when I hear Democrats whining about the fact that Donald Trump's going to appoint a conservative justice, well, you know what? You should have worried about this a couple of years ago. You took something for granted. Nothing against Hillary. This is not an anti-Hillary statement here. But the party as a whole and the party leaders took something for granted. They took something that they made a deal with when Barack Obama won, obviously promising Hillary her turn. And you know what? They didn't see the sea change that, unfortunately, Mr. Trump saw.
Which, sadly, just in a weird little microcosmic way, just happened again in the Bronx.
You're right.
And that's my complaint.
And the media is part of that, too, it has to be said. I mean, whether you devote resources to charting a new political development or not is determined by how seriously you're taking it and how what kind of a lens you're looking at it through. Is it an old lens? Is it a lens clouded by previous experience? Or is it a lens that's clear and up to date?
But more to the point, everything has become so reactive. So, P.S., remember how the immigration disaster of last week? Right.
Sure.
Well, that hasn't actually changed. But now, depending on where you go, it's the Supreme Court all the time, except for, except for this,
immigration issue hasn't gone away. And looking at it from Europe, of course, you've got an echo of it over here. No, it's not an echo of it. It is its own European migration issue.
Yeah,
not a crisis, but a perceived crisis by those who want to get some benefit out of it being a crisis in quotation marks. Yes.
And apropos, which this is also, I think, bears mentioning, if you were there, but if any European press that I've been able to find was, disaster, 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 issue, no resolution, which is typical. It's always bad, 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 bad. Oh, we fixed it on Friday. And then the week starts bad, terrible, yes, solved. And
in Europe's case, they have had a summit, a 27 country summit in Brussels, and they have actually come to an agreement. I mean, who knows how well it will hold, but it was hard fought for, and an agreement was presented, and the media here is reporting that very fact, and I don't think that's hysterical behavior by the press. It's accurate reporting of a human activity, a striving to reach agreement between people who are very divided.
I couldn't agree more, and I am delighted. I am just saying that in the run-up to that, everything that I read, it doesn't mean that that was everything that was written, but most things that I saw said, never happen, won't happen, impossible to happen, they can't agree, they won't agree, well, she's not going to be the chancellor. And I always...
Much press reporting takes the form of the sky is falling, but I mean, that's...
that was all. And then
I think wise readers tend to take that in stride, don't they?
Well... Do you know?
And listeners and viewers.
Excuse
and,
me?
Internet receivers. We all know the way that Well, maybe I'm just being a little too skeptical.
I think you are, because
edging towards cynical. But
No.
People who consume the media are aware that the media has some conventions, that headlines are meant to grab our attention, and bad news tends to be followed rather, or get our eyeballs anyway, rather more than good news does. So, sure, the dangers ahead will always be amplified. And mercifully, when things get solved, there is a great sigh of relief. Or even if they're not solved for all time, if something like an encouraging development happens, it tends to be welcomed.
All right. So this is ageist, so I guess there's so many ists, I'm apt to get in trouble for it. But what you just said, I think, is a very safe statement. Above a certain age,
a comfortable old man talking. I know. Yeah.
Well, it's speaking as a comfortable old lady, but it's not that. I'm not worried about you being able to look at something and go, oh ha ha, this is what's really happening. This is what they're saying, and this is what's really happening. I'm totally confident. This is one of the reasons that you're on the air. But I have less confidence in someone who isn't experienced.
Let me break in. Can I ask a question? You've been talking to Americans over there. What was their thought initially, if you've spoken to them, about when the Supreme Court justice announced his retirement? I'm just interested in what somebody's out of the country, away from the hysteria and the outrage that happened.
Well, those that I've been talking to, and indeed Europeans as well, that I've been catching the opinions of, seem to be pretty much on a line with each other, saying, in effect, I'm not quoting anyone in particular here and not quoting them verbatim, but the overall attitude has been, well, this was going to happen, wasn't it? Why the sudden descent into panic about the future of our entire democracy being at risk?
It's interesting because he's a conservative justice, and the main thing that I worry about and other people worry about is the fact that it's a 5-4 court that's going to be that way for a long time. But in reality, it's when a new conservative justice, who's going to be more conservative than this guy is nominated and possibly put into that position, it really can possibly change things that have been rock standard for 30 and 40 years and could totally change the direction of this country.
And the alarmist press is not wrong to point out that the very fact that precedent has carried considerable weight, and it's now perfectly possible for precedents to be overturned if you get, as you say, a replacement for Anthony Kennedy, who's even more, who is much more to the right than he was, and we'll probably find that these rock solid elements of our judicial landscape are now, at some danger of being overturned. It's not to say that it's not a troubling time for those on the left, but whether it's throwing our entire democracy into severe doubt is really questionable, and that's the point where I would part company with the hysterical headlines, even though I know that we're prone to them.
And the other thing that might be, just throw this in, I know this is probably stupid, but why don't you wait and see who comes, see who's...
There's a danger with wait and see, which is that you'll get overtaken by events a lot more...
That's exactly right.
A lot
right.
more worryingly and a lot quicker than you expect.
What's lying in the background of wait and see is the fact that under this president,
when I say wait and see, you're not talking about who's nominated?
No, what I'm saying is
wait
and see attitude of who's nominated. It goes farther than the Supreme Court, because you have a president for the first time since Richard Nixon, who was unsuccessful at this, who is going to be in control of the presidency. The House and Senate before the midterms, he's got control of that, and he's trying to get control. He really is of the judiciary. He's acting like a businessman. He's trying to. This is the bedrock.
None of it's particularly secret either.
Yeah. No, he aided and abetted by
while
the
campaigning. He made it very clear that he was out to have Roe v. Wade overturned if he could possibly achieve it, and now we're coming within striking distance of him being able to achieve it. So yes, it's a troubling time, and I'm not saying that we can be sanguine about it, but I think there's some value in just saying, why don't we spend more energy prepping for it, all rather than just bewailing it?
I think
it's dangerous.
That's what I'm trying to say. But all I mean by wait and see is I don't mean sitting on one's thumbs the way that it seems that most. But what I mean is who is it not possible? There's pretty much a list of 25 people, right? And it's pretty obvious that somebody from that list, what are their positions? You know, like people could start.
That would be a very useful journalistic exercise.
You think?
Take the...
That's my point.
Yes,
also,
I would like to see it. Yeah, I certainly would. Yeah.
I just, because this is the massive disservice in my view that's being done. People are so, frantic, saturated, give me the 25 people on the list and tell me.
Just turn down the volume a little, and then let's look at the actual elements of truth in what's likely to be ahead of us. Who are the 25 names? What's their track record? What's the calculable degree of support they might have and such like?
Right.
That's good basic journalism. We would welcome that, wouldn't we?
And it goes back to my point is that my point that I've made to a lot of people is I wouldn't necessarily worry about this Supreme Court appointment. I would worry about if you really are concerned about the direction of the country and concerned about decisions of the Supreme Court and concerns about Roe versus Wade and concerns about gay and lesbian and LGBTQ rights, well, then you know what? It's time for you to step forward and get involved. And don't scream and yell and just post socially. Put together networks of people. Put together people that will get people to get out and vote. It's time for people who, instead of crying and whining, to get off their ass.
Yeah,
to get off their ass and work at this, just not be hysterical.
Right, and that's where any encouragement, I think, is absolutely necessary. And, you know, proper, I guess the proper tenets of journalism, if implemented well, could be most helpful. And this is a plea for that rather than, the first person nature of so many of these stories I'm reading is just aggravating. Mm-hmm. I'd just like to say, case
anyway. Well, I understand. I mean, I sympathize, Jill. I absolutely sympathize with you. The basic thing about the basic duty of journalists is to provide information, and I would add to that, present it in a cool way. My sanguineness about and somewhat cool skepticism about the hysterical nature of a lot of headlines is that it is true that an intelligent audience sort of knows that the headlines are going to be hysterical, and as you say, perhaps it's the older element of the audience that is going to take that view, and younger ones more likely to be swayed by them. But whichever side of that is the truer and the more important thing to recognize, the most essential thing to have recognized is the importance of the facts. I know this is a banal and repeated message of mine, but we are, as journalists, in the business of providing stone-cold information. And the more we stick to that, the better. And I go back to my first boss in television's insistence to all of us young journalists who worked for him, never underestimate your audience's intelligence. But on the other hand, never overestimate the facts at their disposal. It's our job to provide those facts.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.